This is HPR episode 2428 entitled Git Logs. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 33 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is Klaatu talks about Git Media and Git Annex.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everyone, this is Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu, and I'm going to talk about Git. Specifically, I'm going to talk about managing binary blobs with Git, because that is famously something that people say rather disparagingly, oh, Git's not very good at managing large files. Git can't manage huge binary files that it can't, you know, parse and diff and merge and so on. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, dear listener, that they are absolutely, unquestionably correct. Git is not very good at managing large files. And I say that with as much love as I can muster for Git, which is a lot. Git, as I've said on probably previous episodes of this, or at least maybe my own show, GNU World Order at gnuworldorder.info. Git was my first version control system. I had never used a version control system before. I didn't even exactly know what they were. I knew something called SVN existed, and I'd probably checked something out from instructions on a website or something. But I had no real experience with it. So when I finally got introduced to a version control system, it was Git. And so that's what I've been using ever since. And that was probably back in 2009 or so. So I'm pretty fond of Git. But the fact is that it's just not designed to deal with large media files. And the reason, or large binary blobs. And that's because Git isn't rsync. You know, I mean, Git, in fact, one of its features is that when you clone a repository, you're getting its entire history. So if someone is, say, making a 3D model of something and then sending up this huge file to the Git repository, and they do that in January, and then they tweak it a little bit progressively until, I don't know, even just until April, then there's probably quite a bit of data that you're going to have to download should you ever do a clone. And you can get around it in a way, because you could do a shallow checkout. But then how do you know that the thing that you're checking out has the stuff further back that you might also need? So then you'd have to, like, sort of cherry pick through the history to find, oh, well, I've got the updated big 3D model, but everything else was checked in way back in December of the previous year. So my checkout that sort of got everything from March on didn't get those. So now I'll have to do, you know, and so it's, I mean, I haven't tried exactly that scenario, so it could go better than what I've described. But the point is that Git starts to add up if you start committing big files and then start modifying those files. It just gets really, really big and bloated, and sometimes prohibitively so. I was managing a server for someone who was doing exactly that. They were doing 3D models to a Git repository, against my advice, I might add. And after, you know, in about 6 months, they emailed me and they were like, hey, look, we need to redo the Git repository because at this point it's something like 33 gigs and it is timing out before I can even download, before my developers can clone the repository. So in other words, suffice it to say that Git, we're going to agree that Git does not really deal with really large files really, really well. It's something that can become a problem. The answer to this is possibly threefold. Well, fourfold if you really work at it, but let's say threefold at first. So one is Git for large files or something like that. I think it's Git LFS is what it's called. And it was put out by GitHub, and it's open source, and it's, well, I don't know if it was actually, I'm not sure if it was put out by GitHub, but it belongs to GitHub now anyway. And yeah, it's Git Large File Storage is what it's called. And you can find out more information about it if you want at git-lfs.github.com. I've never used it. I can't vouch for it. It was a fork of Git-Media. Now, Git-Media and Git-Annex are the ones I'm going to talk about because those are the two that I've used. They're a little bit different in the way they approach the problem or the issue. So Git-Media, for instance, takes a centralized approach. So a repository for all of your big common asset files, whatever they are, media, just big binaries, whatever, you designate a place where they live. And this can be a hard drive on your shelf, or it can be a server, or whatever, NFS share, wherever it may be. And each developer on your team then treats that location as essentially a file share. And that's the place that they grab those files from. Now, Git-Annex is distributed. It goes a little bit more distributed, and it lets you and each developer on the team, or each user on the team, they can create their own repository. So in their local file system, they get a .git/annex directory, and that's where all the big files get committed to and pushed to. It just goes straight to their local file system. The annexes, these little Git annexes, are synchronized regularly so that all of those assets become available to each user as needed. And unless configured otherwise, Git Annex prefers local storage before it will resort to offsite storage. And that's from what I've read, that's a cost. It's meant to be a cost control measure, you know, because it's kind of assuming that, oh, you might be developing on something where it actually costs money to transfer data to and from. So it prefers the local storage and then resorts to offsite if you tell it to. Now, I've used both, so I'm going to talk about both, and you can decide for yourself which one you want to use. I mean, you should probably just try them each, but I'll just kind of briefly mention how each of these two solutions work. So Git-Media is written in Ruby. Now, if you don't know anything about Ruby, that's fine. You don't really need to, but you will need a somewhat respectable Ruby stack on the computer that you're using in order to get this thing installed. So you'll do a Git clone of Git at github.com:albdev/git-media.git, and then you change directory into that, and you do a gem install bundler, which I don't know what that means. Bundle install? Don't know what that means. And then you do a gem build git-media.gemspec. Don't know what that means. And then you do a sudo gem install git-media --gem. And that's the install process. So you go through that, and suddenly Git-Media is installed on your system. And again, I don't really understand any of that. I'm assuming it's basically a pip-type situation for Python. But yeah, it's pretty simple. So once you've installed it, you have to set a couple of configuration options in Git, and you can do it globally, or you can just do it for that repository. And the magic incantation for that is git config filter.media.clean, and then quote git-media --filter-clean, close quote, and then git config filter.media.smudge quote git-media --filter-smudge, close quote. Now, you have to do that on every computer that you want to use Git-Media on. So if you're one of those people who does, you know, you got your laptop and your workstation, and you're developing on both, then you'll want to obviously install Git-Media and then also create those filters manually on each computer. But you only have to do it once per computer. That's the good news. Now, per project, you have to create some filters. And the way that you do this is with a .git attributes file, and it's just line one filter, one file type per line. And so what you're doing is you're telling Git what file extensions it should consider to be a big binary blob, or in Git media terms, media. So you can do this with, for instance, echo quote *.mp4, for instance, space filter equals media space -crlf, close quote, > .git attributes. So you're echoing the string *.mp4 space filter equals media space -crlf, close quote, into a file called .git attributes within your repository, obviously. And you could do that with lots of different file formats. I chose MP4 because it's fairly ubiquitous, but it could obviously be a .mkv, it could be a .ogg, .flac, it can be whatever. It can be a video file, you know, whatever you're committing, whatever wonky big file that you're trying to put into your Git repository. And anytime you do add such a file, if you've got a filter in place, anytime you add that kind of file to your, you know, when you stage it, when you do a git add foo.mp4, then that file gets copied to your repository, in your repository directory, to .git/media. And that's where it sits until it's pushed. Now, assuming that you've got a server somewhere that you're going to push all of this stuff to, then you need to tell your Git repository where those media files are actually going to go once you do push them. Because that's the thing about Git media. It doesn't assume, or that's one of the things about Git media, it doesn't assume that the place where you're keeping your code is necessarily also the place that you're keeping your very large file assets. Again, I think a lot of these make allowances for people developing on platforms that charge them for activity, you know, for bandwidth. So you can set this, the location of your stash, of not your stash, that's a thing in Git. You can set the location of your file share, of your big file share, in .git/config. And that's a standard file in any Git repository, so you should see it already existing. The block of information you need to slap in there is it's an ini style configuration file. So in square brackets you put git-media, so it knows where to find itself, and then the transport equals whatever you're using, probably SCP, but maybe you're using Git protocol, I don't know. And then auto download equals, and you can set this to either true or false. And if you set it to true, then it pulls in assets by default. If you set it to false, then it does not retrieve those large assets. It lets you do that yourself. And then you want to set your SCP user, so that might be SCP user equals Klaatu, and then your SCP host, which is, let's say, example.com. And then your path, to the path to the Git repository. So SCP path equals, and then it could be, let's say, /home/git/foo.git. Now, if you've got any more complex settings than that that you need to use for SSH, like a non-standard port for SSH, or a key file that wouldn't be the default key file, then you can enter all that stuff, and this is what Git, at least last time I checked, this is what Git itself recommends. Just put all that stuff in your .ssh/config file. And I think I've actually done an episode about that on Hacker Public Radio, so look back at some of my episodes. I'm pretty sure I cover the .ssh config stuff. So when you're working with Git media, I mean, now it's set up, so when you're working with Git media, it's mostly invisible to you. You'll work in your Git repository, you'll stage files, whether they're text files or media files, whatever. You add them and you commit them just as usual. The only difference that you'll notice in your workflow is that at some point you'll have to sync your little stockpile of assets or media, whatever you want to call it, to the shared repository. And when you're ready to publish all of your assets so that, you know, everyone else on the team can actually see them, then you just use git /media/sync, S-Y-N-C. And then it sends any new really big file that you have up to the centralized server that you and your team have decided to use for your big files. And that's handy because, you know, if you're at a coffee shop or something, which I used to work in coffee shops a lot, so I'd be on some kind of janky public network that sort of barely works. And so you might push something up to a Git repository, and the last thing you'd want to do is send this huge 5 megabyte file. Yes, I said huge, and then 5 megabyte. On that connection. So you would just send all of your little tiny text files up there, and then when you got back to the office or back home or whatever, then you would do Git media sync and send all of your big files up. It's quite handy. Now, that of course introduces a couple of other things that you might have to learn along the way. As getting started goes, that's all it takes to get started. But I mean, there are some times where you realize, oh man, the whole point of me doing Git and large files is that I want to update these large files and then upload the new version without creating a new, sort of file system node, as it were. You know, I don't want there to be a new blob in Git. So how do I do that? Like, where's the part about the workflow where I can update the media that I have now uploaded to my centralized file share? And that's pretty simple as well. So all you have to do is explicitly tell Git to update the media, which overrides Git media's default setting of, well, don't copy a big file to the server if it already exists. And the way that you do that is Git space update dash index space dash dash really dash refresh. So that it again is Git update index dash dash really refresh. And that forces it to copy a large file up to the server and replaces the one that was already there. Now, when other members of your team, or you, yourself on a different computer, when you clone that repository, no assets are downloaded by default again, because as long as you've set it to false in your Git config file, it won't download that by default. So again, you would just do a Git media sync to copy any of the big media files that are on the server and that are not on your local computer. So in other words, the activity on the big files is always an extra step. It's an explicit command from you, and I think that's intentional. I get the impression that that is very much the design of the system, and I think it makes a lot of sense, because if we're assuming that the big assets are, and they usually are, they're usually things meant for delivery. You know, they're the things that are going to get attached to a project right before it ships out, goes out the door. You don't need to work on the big file assets all the time. You get them done and then you upload them to the server, and that's a snapshot. So anytime you want to update them or download them, that takes an explicit command from you. And that's Git media. That's the quick start on Git media. So now let's talk about Git annex. Git annex, slightly different workflow. Like I say, it defaults to local repositories. I mean, Git media kind of does too, because it stashes all of your... I keep saying stash, and that's a completely different... I mean, that's a thing in Git, so I shouldn't use that. So it squirrels away all of your big files into a local place, the .git/media. But then it sends it up, ideally, to some central repository. And everyone kind of works from that central repository in theory. And Git annex isn't completely different from that, but it's a little bit, the way that it expresses itself is a little bit different. You need Git annex installed in order to use it, obviously, and you can install it probably from your repository. It's pretty well known. It's kind of made its way into, at least from what I've seen, it's in all the major repositories. There is not really any kind of big configuration that you have to do, like the Git media stuff where you had to sort of do the Git config command and then create filters. That's not something that you do with Git annex. So once you've got it installed, it's installed and ready to go. So to use it, you just go into your repository, whatever repository you intend to use this thing with, and you do a Git annex init. That sets the current directory as a Git annex location. There are no, like I said, there are no filters, so you just tell Git annex what to check in to into its system. So it almost does feel a little bit like you're running a parallel version of Git almost, you know, because you'll do a Git add foo.txt, but then you'll do a git annex add foo.mp4. So that takes maybe possibly some getting used to, because it is a separate command. And so if you're sleepy and you forget that the MP4 file is 2.5 gigabytes and you think, oh, I would really like to add this, you have to remember that you don't just git add foo.mp4. You have to do a git space annex space add space foo.mp4. And that adds that particular MP4 to git annex. It records its state in git. And then you'll want to commit it, probably. So you do the git commit is the same as usual, which, again, a little bit confusing, because now you've done git annex add, and now you're doing a git commit normal. So git commit dash m space quote, I added a big file, close quote. And then you have to push, but you have to push to a new an extra location. So annex, normal, annex. That's kind of the workflow. So git push origin master, well, I guess you would have to do the dash u version because this is the first time you pushed. So you do a git push dash u, which means create this thing up on the remote, and then origin master git dash annex. So what you're doing here is you're pushing your current branch, which is probably master. So you're pushing that to your remote, but you're also creating a new branch called git dash annex. And I actually have not looked to see if it actually has to be called git dash annex, or if it's just a common name that makes sense that you should probably use, kind of like master. You don't technically have to call it master, but everyone, it's just kind of convention and it makes sense. So let's just say you have to call it git dash annex. Now a git push, just as with git media, a normal, when you do like a git push, that does not copy your assets to the server. It just sends information about the media to your server. When you're ready to actually share those, the media or the assets, whatever, the big binary blobs, with the rest of your team, then you use a annex sync command. And that's pretty straightforward. It's git space annex space sync dash dash content, and that actually does two things. It pushes anything on your drive, on your local system that is not on its destination, and it pulls from the destination anything that is not on your local system. So far it's probably sounding a lot like git-media, and it is. They both do really, really similar things. The interesting thing about git-annex is that you can it treats the remote file system not as a central location. It can be anything that you want it to be. And this can get a little bit wonky and crazy because it's really just up to you. But you could, maybe you could think of it as adding like little git satellites to whatever you need to add git satellites to. Or you could just think of them as ad hoc git repositories, because that's kind of what it is, to be honest. But git annex itself adds a trait to any remote that you add that you can describe what that remote is. And that's one thing that I think a lot of people kind of forget about Git, because but a lot of people kind of think of Git, oh, well, it lives on a server somewhere. It's GitHub, it's GitLab, it's whatever. And or it's my own private Git server. It's my own host. But I mean, Git doesn't have to live on, it can just live anywhere. It can be a folder on your hard drive, and you could never send it anywhere. It could just live there. So it doesn't have to be, we don't have to be pushing to a cloud or anything like that, or even across the room. It can just be, it could be on in one partition to another, one drive to another. And that's all Annex kind of actually leverages, is this ability for Git to forget to know where things are located based on definitions of what a remote is. So for instance, let's say that we've got a USB drive plugged in. So we could go to the USB drive and we could clone a Git repository from our actual hard drive. And that would just be a standard Git command. The difference, again, would be that you're not doing it over SSH or Git or HTTP. You're just doing a straight Git clone. So you do a Git clone, /home/Klaatu/myproject. So now that folder exists, that git init folder, you know, the thing that you created and have git on, that is cloned onto your thumb drive. Then you can go into the thumb drive version of that repository, and you can do a git annex init, and you can comment for yourself what it is. So you might say, quote, my portable USB thumb drive, close quote. So now you'll know where that repository is located. You don't care right now about that, but you will in the future, and I'll tell you why in a moment. So then you can add a remote, which would be your workstation, you know, the actual hard drive from which you cloned this thing. So you'll do a git remote add workstation space /home/Klaatu/myproject. Okay, so you've just cloned a repository, you've blessed it as an annex location, and then you've added a remote to that clone, which is the hard drive from which you cloned it in the first place. Now you can go to your workstation, the original repository, and do a reciprocal action of adding a remote that is your hard drive, your thumb drive, your removable thumb drive. So you would do a git remote add thumb drive, and then /run/media/thumb drive, or wherever you keep your thumb drive mounted on your workstation. Okay, so those two locations are now aware of each other. They know each other, that each other exists. Great. Big deal, right? Okay, well, remember, you've marked that thumb drive as an annexed location, and Git knows that. So when you're doing a sync, a Git annex sync, it knows what is available to it and what is not. So if you're on your workstation and you think, oh yeah, I forgot, I stashed a bunch of my work on my thumb drive, like my big files on that thumb drive, and I should get those over locally onto my workstation. So you would do a git annex sync --content. And the cool thing about git annex is that if it doesn't have that thumb drive installed, it will tell you that you need to plug it in. So if it knows that there's media out there that is not on your workstation because git annex has told it, but you're syncing now, and so now it's looking for some foo.mp4 file, can't find it. So it'll tell you, unable to access these remotes. And it tells you, you can't access your thumb drive. And it tells you exactly what that thumb drive was. It gives you the UUID of that thumb drive, and it gives any kind of description that you've provided it. So if you'd said my portable thumb drive, then you'd know, oh, right, I don't have my thumb drive plugged in, or I don't have it mounted right now, I should do that. So then you would do that. And then you just redo your git annex sync --content, and you're good to go. Simple. And you can have as many remotes as you want. I mean, if you've got some big files, I don't know why you would manage your life this way, but I mean, if you did it, you know, you'd have some big files on a server, you should have some big files on your USB hard drive, you could have some big files on an NFS share, whatever. It's up to you. You can have annexes wherever you want them to exist. And that's the idea behind git annex. And again, there's a couple of things. I mean, I've already talked about some of the stuff that is different in the workflow. Just the fact that you have to keep invoking git annex this and git annex that. So that feels a little bit different than git media, which feels a little bit more, I'd say, integrated or invisible, maybe would be a better word. But git annex is kind of like right there. Yes, I'm using git annex. And there's some of that later on too, like when you want to remove files or modify files, you know, how do you get them to actually replace those files on your remote? It's not really that hard. It's pretty simple. It's just a bunch of different commands that you can look up on the git annex website. It does a full walkthrough that makes it very, very obvious and very easy what you need to do in order to achieve certain results. And that's it. Those are the three ways of managing big files with Git. And again, I said there were three, one of which I did not discuss, Git LFS. And then I also said, really sort of offhand, I said, oh, well, there's really four. And the fourth way is just not to do it at all, which is not to say commit everything to Git. It's to not commit anything to Git. And I've done this myself a couple of times, and it kind of works. It's not as convenient, I don't think, but in terms of setup, it's basically none. And the way that I handled that was I created a bunch of symlinks within my Git repository pointing to a master directory, a file that contains all of the other files and the whole file structure of the assets that I knew that the Git project technically required in order to work. And it works a charm. You do your Git clone, and you have a bunch of symlinks, and then you place your big master tar file or whatever you've got all your big assets in, and you decompress it, you unarchive it there in the folder, and everything points to it, and all the paths resolve, and it works perfectly. Works fine. So I'm working on formalizing that, actually, because it works so well that I think there might actually be some virtue to it, but I haven't really sat down and ironed out all the kinks or made a friendly interface to it yet. So I am getting there, but right now it's just sort of the lazy method that I do. It does work. You just have to, you know, the burden again is on you to have that master file somewhere and to make sure that it's backed up. And in terms of distributing it, I'm not really sure how easy that's going to be, because if you've got a bunch of developers and they all need the same files, yeah, sure, you can send them the big file and say, well, that's where everything is. Unarchive that in your Git repository, you'll be good to go. But then what if they're also adding big files? And that becomes a really problem, and a big problem. And that's where you would want to start looking toward to Git Media or Git Annex to solve the distribution issue. So that's it. Those are the solutions to big binary blobs and Git. I hope this has been helpful and informative, and I will talk to you probably tomorrow.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.